In this episode of Movie World, as we review a mixed bag of movies, we review 21 and Over, Phantom, and Bless Me, Ultima. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yasti as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, the show is for you. Good evening, all.
Hello.
Hi.
We never talked about the Oscars.
We said everything there was to say.
Well, no, after they actually gave them out. I was quite happy this year with the way it all panned out in particular. I really liked Seth MacFarlane's show. I think he's coming for a lot of stick, not quite the Ricky Gervais level of stick that we saw with the Golden Globes a couple of years ago, but I really enjoyed the show.
I enjoyed the show. I'm glad that the love was spread.
I'm glad Yazdi was tweeting and interacting on Facebook all night long. It's brilliant. Thank you so much.
No, it was fun. I mean, I was generally happy with their distribution of the riches. I mean, I think the only thing which might have bettered it is if, you know, Emmanuel Riva would have won instead of Jennifer Lawrence for Best Female Actor. But even then, you know, I really like Jennifer Lawrence's performance. Seth MacFarlane, I mean, I don't necessarily appreciate his humor, but I think he was a great host. And I think people need to just, you know, stop being so stuck up and being so upset about every little thing. You know, it's a show about movies, and what is more artificial than movies? And don't get so hung up about what everybody says. So just, you know, go smoke something.
I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah, my favorite moment of the night was, I guess I had two, but Ang Lee winning Best Director was such a good moment for me. He was our Best Director, I think, for Movie Waller Awards as well. Mm-hmm. And I think of all the people on that list, as much as they all deserve to be there, I think Ang Lee in particular had the hardest job in translating that wonderful book into that wonderful movie. So really pleased to see that. And I'm really glad to see Ben Affleck get some love for Argo. Mm-hmm. I mean, he gave the Best Director speech, even though it wasn't the Best Director Oscar. So good for him.
Yeah, I mean, I like you, Joe, my happiest moment was when Ang Lee won. I think the general consensus was that Steven Spielberg would win for Lincoln. And, you know, any other year, Steven Spielberg beats the other directors, but not this year. I thought Ang Lee's accomplishment was so much more with this movie for the reasons you said, Joe. So I was really happy to see him win. And I'm glad that he's now one of the very few directors who have two Best Director trophies. And I've been meaning to post something on our website. There's a picture of a very young Ang Lee when he was first making movies. And then he wrote this little piece about when he was disillusioned, he was trying to break into the movie industry and he almost gave up. And he wrote this little piece in Chinese and somebody translated it and has put it on the internet. And it's really heartfelt to think that, look, my God, look where he's come from, where he was even doubting that he could be a grip even, you know, on the set of a movie. So it's a good story. I like that.
Yeah, we saw a really cute photograph of him eating In-N-Out Burger.
That was his celebration dinner.
That was his celebration dinner. It's just so cute and down to earth. And
love it.
Yeah, no, it was good.
Well done, Mr. Lee.
And he hasn't claimed his mug yet, his Movie Wallahs mug.
That's right.
So, Ang Lee, if you are listening,
anytime you need a Movie Wallahs mug, just give us a call. You have earned it. And if you weren't surrounded by a whole bunch of bodyguards and we could actually get to you, I would mail the damn thing. But you're going to have to phone us. But it's definitely yours.
Yes.
And anyone else that wants a Movie Wallah mug, go to cafepress.com/MovieWallahs.
Cafepress.com. /MovieWallahs.
There you go.
And you too can have your own mug and pretend you want it.
All right. Well, we've got three movies to talk about tonight, so let's get on with them. Let's start, I guess, with 21 and Over. Rashmi, Yazdi, you're going to tell us all about 21 and Over.
So 21 and Over is being marketed as a film from the writers of The Hangover, which should give you an idea of the type of movie it is. The film chronicles a night in the life of a medical student just as he turns 21. He has a major exam the next morning, but is that going to stop him from having a wild night of debauchery with his two friends? I haven't seen this movie, but the plot does sound like The Hangover, the teenage edition. The film stars Miles Teller, Skylar Astin, and Justin Chan, and it was directed by John Lucas and Scott Moore, who both also wrote the screenplay. Now, you guys both saw it. Does it carry the flag of the Hangover movies proudly, or does it do them a disservice?
So, Yazdi, before I start, what do you think I'm going to say about this movie?
I'm going to say that you absolutely hated it, and it was gross and vile.
And you would be absolutely correct. So, nudity, check. Naked college girls, check. Orgy, check. Racial, sexual stereotyping of every imaginal kind, check, check, check. This is made, as you said, Yazdi, by the same guys who made The Hangover. So just from that description, you should know what you're going to get. This is Hangover the College Years, only not as good or funny, and even the bromance didn't save it. I hated this movie.
Go for it, Joe.
All the things that Rashmi listed there are ingredients of my perfect movie. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Everyone's drawing parallels to The Hangover because it's written by the same people that wrote the original Hangover, and also the sequel, I guess, and presumably Hangover 3 that's coming out later this year. For me, the movie was more like Superbad, but it was Superbad without the heart. You know, one of the things that made Superbad so good was the wonderful relationship between the three guys and the journey on which they went and the things that they got themselves into. But there was always this connection between the three of them that made it really work. And I think the problem with this movie was that it was, like you said in our last episode, it was devoid of charm. I think you described Oz in that manner, but... And this movie could have had a very easy fix in my mind. There are some revelations about the character's situation that come very late in the movie that I think create some sympathy for those characters that had we known them up front, we would have had a much warmer relationship with them going through the movie. As it is, you get these basically three douchebags going around doing douchebag things. And I mean, you know, some of it is funny, but it was so hard to connect with any of it and to actually give a damn about what was happening to any of them. You know, the story about this guy with, you know, going to a medical school interview and getting drunk the night before. It's like, I don't care. I don't care if you don't get into medical school because you're an ass. And, you know, this is how I felt through the whole movie. So, you know, it was entertaining enough, but it was not a likable movie.
Yeah, and I think, Joe, so a couple of things. I mean, the reason why it gets comparison to The Hangover is it starts with present day and a strange situation.
It's the same story. Yeah,
yeah, it's the same formula. It's the same formula.
But it's the night of The Hangover. Right. This is the photo montage of The Hangover, the movie.
Right, so it's formulaic in that sense. And I think the other thing is that it's just basically a montage of antics that are so extreme that they've kind of forced into this story of these three people. So it's almost like the antics came first, and then they thought, oh, we better put some story around this so we can string it all together. And you mentioned Superbad, and I think it did try to want to be the new Superbad of this generation. And the other film it reminded me of, and I think you asked me this as we were walking out, was Project X. But even Project X was better, and I didn't really like Project X to begin with. So it really missed the mark. I mean,
yeah,
I mean, just, it was so...
They were just trying to turn up the notch on everything. So I thought they had some funny moments, but more than anything, this movie had gross outs that elicited physical, like, that actually manifested physically within me. Like, there's a vomit scene that literally had me like holding onto my stomach because I was ready to blow myself. I mean, it was really horrible. And so there's a lot of cringing all the way through this. And then, you know, the overall tone of the movie is incredulity. You know, you just go from nonsense to more nonsense, from, you know, bad situation to worse situation, from stupid scenario to even more ridiculous scenario. And, you know, Rashmi, you mentioned it, you know, I'm not offended by gratuitous bare breasts in a movie, but these were so random. Like, it was such a random thing. It was like, it reminded me, do you remember that movie Airplane back in the day?
Yes.
Yeah. Where, you know, the airplane's going down and there's all this chaos happening and then suddenly a woman walks by with boobs bouncing across the screen. Right. It was just that same joke, but I was like, this is supposed to be an outdoor scene. It made no sense. So I was like, okay, so I guess somebody wanted to get a pair of boobs in here. Okay, fine, but wow, that was random. And it had me scratching my head. But again, it was trying to up the ante on everything that we've seen. And when you do that, you have to throw in more stuff. You know, there was a ridiculous penis joke that happened towards the end of the movie. And it's like every guy in the auditorium is crossing their legs because it's one of those painful penis jokes. But it's just all they're doing is just trying to kick up the level of stupidity, of nonsense, of offensiveness, and
I just
without
feel,
heart, it doesn't work.
I just feel this is a really sad portrayal of college life, and anyone who hasn't been to college is going to watch this and, well, either want to be dying to go and then be completely disappointed, or just, it's just crazy. It's crazy that this is the sort of films that are coming out. It just, it kills me.
But we always had these movies. I mean, you remember movies like Animal Party?
Yeah, and Porky's recreated. Right, right. Of course it is, but... And even American Pie, I would put in the same bucket. But it's just ridiculous to me that they keep making them. But this one, I think, just wanted to do the baddest, craziest, sickest things. And they got away with it.
I mean, I personally like the Harold and Kumar movies. And they're kind of along the same vein. But I think there is, as silly and stupid as they are, there is a sweetness underneath it. And I think that was the issue with... That was not the issue. That is what saved... or significantly elevated Superbad. I think you have to eventually care for these characters. And this was my biggest problem with the sequel to Hangover, where they were just so, you know, what they were doing was so reprehensible that I stopped caring about any of these characters. I was like, you know, you deserve, you know, what befalls you.
We all need a McLovin moment, you know? We all need something to make us genuinely smile. And you know, there were lots of laughs here, but nothing that made me smile, nothing that made me feel for any of them. Sorry, Yazdi, I'll let you finish your point.
No, that was it.
Okay, let's wind this one up.
Sure. So, I mean, I think the movie, really hard to recommend this one. I mean, I did have fun in the moment, but I think like last year's Project X, this one's going to come and go without any fanfare. It has its market. The people that like the previews will go and see the movie and they'll get exactly what they paid for. It's just the wrong side of the buddy comedy line. And I think, you know, that's what scares me about the forthcoming Hangover 3. You know, the relationship is the important thing in these movies. And then you can throw all this crazy antics around them and the movie will hang together. But without first establishing a reason for us to like these characters, you just end up with nonsense. And that's where this movie lay. So I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10. I think that's pretty generous, but you know, it's not horrible. It could have been so much better. And I think just reordering the scenes, literally, if you bring a couple of scenes from the end and you put them in at the beginning, it would make so much difference.
Lazy, lazy, lazy. I don't think anyone over the age of 21 will get much out of this. I'm going to give this one a 2 out of 10.
Oh.
It's so lazy.
I hate it.
It's so lazy. I think that's what really got me. It was so incredibly lazy.
No, I mean, I think lazy is unfair because I think there were some really clever jokes in there, some funny moments. You know, I mean, the writing, I think, wasn't actually that bad. As I look at, like, the dialogue and as I look about the situations, it's just the movie doesn't gel. But I didn't think the writing was horrible.
It was just lazy. Let's quickly move on.
We can go to Phantom or we can go to Bless Me Ultima.
Let's go to Phantom.
All right.
So Academy Award nominee Ed Harris, David Duchovny and William Finkner, I can never say his name properly, star in Phantom, which is a Cold War era suspense thriller about a Soviet submarine captain haunted by his past, who was forced to lead a covert mission that could spark a global nuclear war. Written and directed by Todd Robinson and inspired by true events, Phantom is a deep-sea adventure about extraordinary men facing impossible choices. So we were lucky enough to actually see this with the director and writer and the producers. Most of the film was actually shot in San Diego.
Woo! San Diego.
So, Yazdi, is this worth taking a dive into?
I think so. I think... You know, it's an earnest, legitimate, engaging thriller. It gets its job done. I don't think anybody's necessarily going to remember it 2 or 3 or 4 months from now. It's not going to make anybody's best of the year lists. But, you know, if you have 2 hours to spend, it doesn't insult your intelligence. It's reasonably well-paced. It goes through the motions. It's kind of in this submarine thriller genre, you know, The Hunt for Red October and, you know, that kind of a movie. I would recommend it. I wouldn't say anybody rush out and watch it, but I think it's a legitimate piece of action movie business.
Joe?
I mean, we've seen this before, this kind of chain of command drama. The Hunt for Red October, the Crimson Tide movie that you just mentioned there, Yazdi. And it so badly wants to be as intense as those movies, but it doesn't get there to me. And I think there's a little bit of a clumsy filmmaking here. I think the direction's a little bit wooden. You know, the performances are very good. It's just the direction and the pacing of it just seems a little off. And I think it's an inexperienced director at hand here. I think he needs to just sharpen his skills somewhat. So, I know what I think the movie's problem is, but it's an okay movie, just not a good one. So before we come to what I think the movie's problem is, let's see what you thought of it, Rashmi.
Yeah, I agree with you both. I found this to be a really average movie that lacked depth and story. It kept my attention just about, but for me, it's a strange decision to make a film about a Russian fleet with all American actors. And I understand, and this was one of the questions that came up in the Q&A, that it's better not to have American actors do hammy Russian accents. But why not change the story then? I just couldn't connect with this as a result.
Yeah, I mean, to add to that, I mean, I was way beyond the halfway mark of the movie when I even realized that these were supposed to be Russian characters. I thought these were, I mean, the movie says it's set in Russia. I thought we'll be explained sometime in the movie why these Americans happen to be on this Russian boat, you know.
So the vodka and the fur hats and the boots and the...
No,
the pictures of Stalin in the background didn't give it away for you.
I actually had a moment of revelation where I was like, oh, these are all meant to be Russians, like an hour and 15 minutes into the movie. So I wish that there was something to let us know more clearly. I think somebody could have tried some feeble Russian accent at least.
I think, Yazdi, you just needed to have had a couple of espressos before going in there, because I think it was clear. It was an odd decision. Here's where I think the movie fell down, and I think it was the overall lack of character development, because you have these chain of command dramas, right? And the way that they work is you have, you know, somebody who is inflexible, you know, the bad guy who has a position of authority, and you have the good guy who is in a position of, who is a subordinate who refuses to insubordinate. You know, I mean, that's really how these things build tension, because the good guy then has to figure out a way around the situation that he's in. And I think the issue here was that the characters just stayed who they were all the way through. There was no transition. The Ed Harris character, in particular, I think, was just kind of stuck with who he was, and he never did the brave thing. He never did the heroic thing. At least I never felt that way about what his actions were. So that, to me, I think, just led me to not be quite as involved in what was happening on screen as perhaps I would have otherwise been. I wasn't invested in what was happening to him.
See, for something that's a thriller, there wasn't much tension, and there certainly wasn't any sense of excitement.
Really?
And it just felt like...
So you've switched a bit. So that sounds like a really harsh position.
Yeah.
Okay, because I got the sense that you liked it.
No, I think it was a very average movie.
Okay, because that's a very strong pick.
Yeah, but I think it was. There was no excitement. This is a thriller.
I got some excitement.
I didn't get any sense of excitement. And I think the thing was, the dialogue was strange. There was a lot of technical speak.
There was a lot
of time spent on technical speak. So, yeah, we know we're in a submarine. We get the claustrophobia. We can feel it. Good directing for some of the parts. But, I mean, I felt like so much time was wasted on the technical portion that we could have had more of that character development, and that just didn't come.
I like the technical portion. I mean, I didn't like it, but it certainly didn't bother me. And I actually was excited. I think all those, you know, I mean, so I think to be very clear, this is a very home brewed effort. Okay. Yes. This movie was made, you know, with pennies probably. Yes. And so
in 4 days probably.
Right.
Well, we know. I mean, it was made in 2 weeks, I think, on a submarine in San Diego.
Right. So I think considering all of that, the movie did in parts was pretty exciting to me. I liked all, you know, the parts where they were shooting whatever torpedoes to each other. I was reasonably engaged with that part. And I liked the claustrophobia. I got a sense of, you know, being confined in this space and there was some defection going on possibly. And so, I mean, it engaged me. I mean, I wasn't, the hairs on the front of my hand weren't standing up, but,
Yeah. The other problem I had with the movie was it had this very digital look that I found horribly distracting. This didn't feel like a celluloid movie, and it wasn't. I mean, they said at the end that they filmed on red cameras. But I think the cinematographer obviously had his work cut out for him dealing with the confines of the submarine set. You know, I think they had to film in some very difficult situations. So, well, I think that got him away from what I think would have been a couple of different tweaks to the camera or some post-processing to make this look less like video, because it had a real video kind of made-for-TV look for me that was horribly distracting. And I don't know if you saw that, Rashmi or Yazdi.
I didn't.
Really bugged the heck out of me.
I think I was probably half disengaged by that time, so I didn't.
The lighting was so odd. It felt very artificially lit. And so, you know, I felt that we were inside a submarine, but I felt like, you know, the submarine was a set. You know, I never really bought into the fact that they were, you know, thousands of feet under the ocean. Yeah. So anything else to say before we wrap up?
No, I mean, I have always been and will always be a fan of Ed Harris. I think he is such an effortless screen presence. And considering his physicality, you know, he really, it's surprising how much he engages the camera. And I think, you know, he deserves to be a giant movie star, and he deserves to have the kind of adulation that maybe a Jack Nicholson does or an Al Pacino does. And you know, in this movie, again, I mean, he doesn't have much to play with, but, you know, at least he grounds his character. And I really wish he gets material deserving of his stature. And I also really like William Fichtner, who is always so nice. I mean, so such an interesting person. He was in the movie Go. He was in he was in that movie with Nicolas Cage.
Drive Angry.
Yes, Drive Angry. He was in, I believe he was in
Wasn't he in Seven Psychopaths as well?
Maybe,
I can't remember.
But, you know, I really enjoy watching him on screen as well. So I like some of the actors in the movie. I enjoyed watching them.
All right. Do you want to score, Yazdi?
Yeah, so again, you know, I think if you want to spend a couple hours on a rainy Saturday afternoon, you know, and pay $2.99 and download it and watch it off of iTunes or at the back of a plane, I would certainly recommend it for that. Considering its intentions, I think, and its limited budget, I think it's a reasonably well-made movie. I did not care for the end of the movie at all, but for what it is, I give it an average 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, I admire the movie for what it so badly wants to be. I think I can see why the level of talent that they got were attracted to the script, because I think the story is potentially intriguing. And, you know, it. I think one thing that we haven't mentioned here yet was that it was based off of a set of events. Mm-hmm. So a submarine went missing. It was a Russian submarine. And, you know, they found an unexploded nuclear warhead. So there's some loose facts around which this narrative was based, and I admire them for trying to piece together what may have happened here. So, you know, I can see why the project got legs, and I can see why the film got made. It's just, it's not what it wanted to be, and it's not as tense as it could have been. And so, you know, it's a middle of the road 5 out of 10. You know, good job, and I think in better hands this would have been a much more effective story.
Overall, this one sank for me. Too much melodrama and a ridiculous ending, but I did like the acting by Ed Harris and William Fichtner. How do you say his name?
Fichtner. And he was in Black Hawk Down. He was in
everything.
Yeah, he was in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. He was in Prison Break. He was in Drive
Everything.
Angry.
Everything. So for me, this is a 4 out of 10.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's move on then to our third movie of the week, which is Bless Me Ultima. Yesti, take it away.
Bless Me Ultima is a beloved novel first published in 1972. Rodolfo Anaya, the writer, told the coming-of-age story of a young boy of 7, Antonio Mares y Luna, who lives in a small town in New Mexico just after World War II. His parents invite Ultima, an elderly woman from the community, to live with them. And Ultima has many powers of healing and magic and becomes a sort of a spiritual advisor to the young protagonist as he learns to deal with and understand the true nature of the people around him. This is essentially a story of a young boy finding his identity within the confines of the world around him. Well, here is the film adaptation of this very celebrated book. It is directed by Carl Franklin, who previously helmed One False Move, Devil in a Blue Dress, and One True Thing. The film stars Luke Ganelon as the young protagonist and Miriam Colon as Ultima. And it was the script was adapted by Carl Franklin as well. So do you guys bless this film with a good rating?
It was a likable and a very gentle movie. I'm not familiar with the source material, but I think clearly it was made for fans of the book. It just had this strange feeling that the storytelling was a very, very unusual, and I don't really know how to be more specific about that. It almost felt that it was like a foreign language film done in English with Mexican actors. I mean, it had this really odd tone to it, but I almost wanted subtitles at times because the colloquialisms were in there without subtitles, and the English that was spoken was so heavily accented that it was, you know, it was hard to understand the decision, you know, given that it was set in Mexico, to do it in English. But
yeah, I mean, I'll see if I can word that a different way. So this is a very heartfelt alternative coming of age movie, which is I think very different to anything we've seen before. I love the fact that we were actually invited into the family and life of this 7-year-old Mexican boy living in New Mexico. I love even more that this is a film about witches and magic, but in a totally not Harry Potter way. I think this is not a must-see, but it's a try-and-see. And I know exactly what you're talking about, Joe. I tried to articulate it by saying it felt like an old Hollywood film made about 40 years ago. But I think that it's because it's captured from the point of view of a 7-year-old who's now a middle-aged man. So it tried to be oldie-woldy, old western type of feel. It had that kind of grainy old western feel, but it really worked for me. I felt transported back to that time.
Yeah, I thought the characters were very nicely done and well-rounded. Sorry, Yasda, you were going to say something?
No, I was just going to ask if it's a good, relatable story. Is it engaging?
It's very engaging. I mean, I loved the story of this 7-year-old and life for this 7-year-old in this particular area, village, geographical region, and the families and how they all coexist together. It was like watching an episode of Little House on the Prairie, Mexican style.
Actually, that's pretty spot on. I mean,
that makes me want to rush out and watch it.
It was very nice. It was a very nice story. And I think the only thing that failed for me that would have made this a great movie is that I wish it had had a little bit more emotional depth. I wanted to know more about the family, and I think if there had been a little bit more character development, this would have really elevated this movie.
Whereas I didn't find that to be a problem. I think the characters were very well. There's not a lot of exposition in this movie, which is interesting. You know, a lot of what you see, you end up kind of thinking about and interpreting, as opposed to, you know, the movie going outright and telling you exactly what's going on. So the whole Ultima being this, you know, magical witch
doctor, yeah.
It's not overtly, you know, she's not got a book of spells and a cauldron, you know, she's not kind of an out there witch. She's almost presented early on in the movie as this, like a medicine woman more than a witch. So you never really know the source of her power. You never really know if it is power or if it's
Faith,
right. So, but it does a very good job of telling the story. I mean, I enjoyed what was going on, and I found it quite engaging.
Everything you guys have told me makes me feel regretful that I missed it. I would really want to catch it.
I think you would enjoy it, Yazdi.
Yeah, it's not a rush out and see. I mean, I would happily recommend people see this at home, in the home environment, yeah, on DVD or on Netflix when it comes out. And it's one of those movies that's a very easy movie to watch. It doesn't insist that you watch it, but the experience is kind of very laid back and nice. So, you know, it's the kind of movie I would be happy watching over a couple of evenings kind of thing. It's not one of these compelling dramas where you're dying to see what happens next.
Yeah.
But it's just a very comfortable movie watching experience. I don't know how to describe that any better, but it's, you know, it's very gentle.
Mm.
It's kind of like a really good old Bollywood family, about a Bollywood film about families. Remember those old 70s Bollywood films?
Yeah.
It kind of made me feel a little bit like that. Should we wrap this one up?
Yeah, that all sounds like high praise to me.
Okay, I'll start. So, Bless Me, Ultima is a sweet film about faith and growing up Mexican-American. I think it's worth a watch. I'm going to give this one a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, nothing to add to what Rashmi said there. I agree with all of those points. Definitely worth a watch. A very enjoyable movie. 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10.
Good.
Is that our movie of the week then?
I think so. Movie of the last 2 weeks.
Who'd have thought it? Yeah, it is. It outscored 21 and Over and also Phantom.
Yeah.
Yes.
We should have put it at the beginning of the podcast.
Yeah.
All right. Well, mail at movieworldlost.com. Let us know what you think of these movies, of the podcast, and of the cat that's sitting right here on the desk here, staring at Yazdi. Twitter.com/movieworldlost, Facebook.com/movieworldlost as well. Until our next show, it's Too Many Movies and Too Little Time. Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.